Unsee the future. The Hopi Chatty Bits. Hello and welcome to Unsee the Future, the Hopi Chatty Bits, the podcast in which I, Timo Peach, meet artists, solar punks and change makers, reimagining the stories we think we're in. Today is an even more unexpected episode than normal. They're all a bit unexpected at the moment. But today's wasn't even planned to be a recording. It's brought to you courtesy of Peer Magazine, the wonderful local journal of creatives and businesses starting up and doing splendid, friendly, joyful things around my home hood in Bournemouth, Christchurch and Poole. It was founded by Sammy Murphy, who's the art director and editor to this day, and she commissioned me to do my first article for the title. There I was, all ready for my centre spread photo shoot, splayed across a chaise lounge, and she actually asked me to write something and go meet a fascinating person who is the subject of today's episode. Now, I just took along the usual kit to record the conversation with this person, and in the end, although it's not properly recorded in a sense, I thought this is too good a chat not to share. And leading up to this chat, she showed me around where she works for an hour and a half, and we'd already been gassing away, and I'd been introduced to the wonderful staff in this particular location. So who am I meeting in this special episode? Penelope Norman is a researcher and leads the MA in Digital Fashion Innovation at Arts University Bournemouth, my old stomping ground a very long time ago. She brings 15 years of industry experience into fashion curriculums to create a network of innovative fashion graduates for new careers in digital, sustainable and innovative fashion design and production. Working with international universities, creating shared sustainable design curriculum and consulting with industry on the integration of digital fashion practice, VR showrooms and sustainable and inclusive methodologies into those production cycles. We had a fascinating chat as she showed me around what she is also seconded to run with her course. And it's the Arts University Bournemouth Innovation Studio. It's a place full of great toys for industry, but it also brings together industry and current professional practices with the students, not simply to learn from each other, but to learn together in the classroom sometimes. And I came away with it thinking, crikey, someone's actually doing innovation after all. So here is my informal recording for Peer Magazine, from which I wrote my article. I urge you to go and find the whole splendid printed edition, which is out in local venues across my hood in Bournemouth, Christchurch and Poole. Peer Magazine, issue 7. There's a lovely picture of Penny in the middle there. And that you can read how I interpreted this conversation into print. It's well worth grabbing the whole copy. They're free and they're wonderful quality, and you will want to stack the lot in your loo. So let's get into this fantastic informal chat that I had with Penny Norman. Well, I am here with Penelope Norman. And before we talk about the context you're in, which is the Innovation Studio at AUB, how did you get into fashion? What was it that drew you into the whole industry of fashion?
Right, well, right from the beginning, yeah. I think. I just always loved clothes. Like, right from the beginning, you know, when I was little, the absolute optimum of a happy day would be getting on the bus with my mum and going and having, like, a shopping day and then coming home and, like, putting all the clothes on and putting on a fashion show of kind of new clothes. And we didn't have a lot of kind of money to have lots and lots of things, so they almost made it more special. Yeah. And I think I just got into my head. I was like, well, if I work in the fashion industry, I'll be working around clothes, but I'll also probably get free clothes, and then I'll make money to buy clothes, and then I can just have lots of clothes all the time. And it was as sort of, you know, as ingenuous as that. It was kind of like, I like clothes and I wanted to have lots of lovely things, and I used to flick through fashion magazines and be sort of like looking at these amazing, beautiful clothes and the different shapes and the different textiles and fabrics, and you know, and I wanted to design them as well. So right from sort of age 10, 11, I was sort of sat design. I used to like draw designs and graphic designs and different logos for different companies, and I used to take them to school and sell them for like 25p for like a fashion design. And yeah, so I think it was just, yeah, I just always really loved it. And I used to watch the Clothes Show live. That was kind of
Clothes Show, yeah. I did quite enjoy that.
Yeah.
I mean, when I was here in this building many years ago, fashion was the one aspect of creativity I didn't get. But my best mate was studying fashion, and he was so fashion mad, and he could do those wonderful florid fashion drawings. Can you do those?
So I love drawing. I absolutely love drawing. And sometimes you forget about drawing when you're in the middle of kind of, you know, creative technology and all the rest of it. And sometimes I do take myself off and go with my daughter and we're like, we'll just have a drawing afternoon and we'll draw. And that's kind of, that reminds you why you kind of love what it is you do, that creativity. And I always say to the students, because students will go, well, I can't draw. Like, everybody can draw. Absolutely every single person can draw. You might not, in the same way the fashion industry has its beauty standard, drawing has a particular kind of perceived standard, but that's, you know, your handwriting is what your handwriting is, and I think that's what's really exciting about drawing.
Yeah, definitely. What is the essence of fashion to you? You clearly have lived it as an instinct. You're exactly where you should be in a general sense in that industry. All the childhood signals were there and instincts. But what is the essence of fashion to you? Why you love it?
So for me, I think kind of things have changed along my journey. There wasn't sort of one pinpoint aspect, but something that's carried through my whole practice is making people feel good. So kind of when I was growing up and kind of when I was studying, it was this point in time where everybody had to be a size zero. The beauty standard was this kind of 13-year-old body shape going down the catwalk. You wouldn't meet a woman that went through the 90s without trying every single diet under the sun. And it was kind of like, well, that wasn't realistic. And what I've always liked is curves and the curves of the body and draping fabric and kind of, you know, for me, the essence of fashion is kind of somebody feeling amazing and kind of thinking about the physical silhouette, but also changing the physical silhouette, allowing you to kind of almost become something different by wearing something that's going to distort or change kind of the way you look. So, you know, all of that kind of size zero, absolutely skinny body fashion, for me, that wasn't where the excitement was. The excitement was kind of like Margiela or Yoji or kind of body map and kind of looking at kind of how the body could be changed or altered to become something really artistic.
You're talking about movement there, and that really relates to drawing, doesn't it?
Yeah.
The movement of the pencil loves curves and shapes and flows, right?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And a kind of drawing was, you know, I was drawing from the moment I could. And I think kind of those curves and those shapes is something that was always really important to me. And kind of the human form is that. And we move. And, you know, every single body should be celebrated and should be sort of, you know, admired and celebrated. And nobody should be. I think inclusivity is really important. And I think kind of fashion for a while wasn't inclusive. You know, I didn't feel that fashion was inclusive, and it's been really important to me to kind of push into that area of kind of everybody being celebrated.
I have learnt, I think, that fashion is fun, and it's not just exclusive. But you did a talk here back in October, didn't you?
Yeah.
That was, it's very much looking at the idea that we shouldn't be designing for size. Because yes. What does that mean anyway?
Yeah.
It is about shape, right?
Yeah.
That's what you did a talk here.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's kind of designing for shape has been when I went to university and did my final major project, it was called Shape Not Size, and I've kind of kept that as a tagline throughout everything that I did. So I wanted to celebrate real bodies, curvy bodies, you know, and working with drape, it has always been kind of working in 3D has always been like really exciting for me. So you draw something on a piece of paper, but that is, you know, a student will always draw a front of a garment and completely forget about the back. Whereas for me, if you're working with fabric on a stand, you're designing in 3D, but you're not necessarily designing with pencil to paper. You're designing in a full 3D kind of round. So the fabric goes around the body and you're looking at the curves and kind of the kinetic movement of a body.
Movement, exactly. Yeah. That's the whole point of fashion, isn't it? The way that something moves in a space.
Yeah, yeah. So, well, I mean, for me, that's kind of what I really, really love about it. There's an amazing body of work around kinetic pattern cutting and looking at kind of really challenging and making the kind of the traditional pattern cutting rules, throwing those out the window and working in a really different way to actually kind of thinking about how we move and kind of articulate. And so that for me is really exciting. And I've always done that. So my final collection at university was draped around the body. So everything was created with sort of design with my hands through 3D. And then on into my career working in that way as well. And still now, you know, I deliver a unit to the students here, all on 3D creative pattern cutting, and integrate kind of digital processes within that.
Now that's interesting, because what you're talking about there is a very holistic, I would say, healthy, it's a judgment word, but a healthy approach to physicality and to creativity and self-expression. There's a lot of wellness implied in the way you describe this, and a sense of traditional technology, and yet your MA was in fashion innovation. Yeah. So how does somebody who's clearly so attuned to the humanity of fashion, the inclusivity and the reality of bodies, the wellness, why were you drawn to innovation in fashion?
So I think kind of from being in the area of, you know, my first job in the industry, I was able to work with women that identified as plus size, working for a plus size brand, Anna Schultz. And one of the amazing things there was having these women come into the studio, into the showroom, and they might have never even worn a dress before because they felt eliminated from being able to wear a dress because Neiman Marcus, Barney's, Harrods, Selfridges would keep the plus sizes off the store, or it would be like a little section right at the back next to swimwear or something. That's where they kind of would send anybody with curves. They could go down there. And for me, kind of seeing the joy in what these women kind of were getting from actually being celebrated for their bodies was really important. And I really enjoyed that career, and kind of working in that space was really exciting. But I think the thing that took me into the innovation side of things was my career in the industry was based through from kind of 90s, 2000s, kind of early into sort of 2010, 2011. And you suddenly realise that actually during that period of time, I've been celebrating women and bodies, but the processes that I've been using to sample my clothing, to kind of, you know, create these garments, flying fabric around the world, embellishments, kind of strike-offs, was actually really detrimental to the planet. And I think kind of sustainability was never really something that was considered. That's why the industry is in the mess that it's in. You know, we're the second biggest damaging industry on the planet. And so for me, it was kind of like, okay, where can we bring the innovation in? Where can I continue to do what I love? Where can I continue to be in a space where I can continue celebrating everybody, but also work in a more sustainable way? And I think that is what drew me into kind of starting to look into the innovation and different ways of being able to continue working in an industry that I love, but feeling morally that I was doing something to kind of push back or kind of make better some of the kind of damaging practices that I'd been engaging with for 20 years.
I mean, it is estimated very loosely that the fashion industry alone accounts for some 10% of all global carbon emissions, just from that metric. Vague, but big enough to be frightening. Do you feel alone in the fashion industry in your attitude here?
No, I don't. I think there are a lot of people that are like me trying to make a difference. But it's a difference that's hard to make because, you know, fast fashion isn't going anywhere and we need fast fashion. You know, I've got a 13-year-old daughter. She grows. I'm a single mother. I don't have boundless amounts of money coming in to be able to, you know, buy her the most expensive clothing and then upgrade that in 5 weeks' time when she's grown again, you know. I will consume fast fashion for my daughter, which again, morally, that kind of, I have issues with that. But
we're all complicit, man.
But it is the way that it is. But I think kind of, you know, there are a lot of people out there going, okay, well, if we do have fast fashion, we have this need for fast fashion, how can we sort of ecologically make what we're doing better? And I truly believe that there are processes that we can use to make the fast fashion industry, the whole fashion industry, a lot healthier and a lot better and a lot more sustainable.
And there's this suggestion, you suggest that there's like 80% of environmental impact of garments can be addressed at the design stage, right?
Yeah, so that was in a European report that came out, you know, and I always say to the students, yeah, 80%, so if 80% of the environmental impacts can be considered and sort of guided at the design stage, that means as a designer, 80% of, you know, the destruction of the planet that is happening, the climate catastrophe, the kind of, you know, the environmental issues that we have, are our responsibility. So I feel a responsibility. I want to show industry how we can behave better, because at the end of the day, I want my daughter to grow up in a world that's actually a nice place to be, that we're not destroying, you know, and it's really sad to see what we're doing to the planet. And we will always need to wear clothes, but if we can do things in a better way, surely we should. You know, and there's legislation coming in. We're going to have to make changes. Yeah. It's sad that it's taken the industry it's sad that the industry has had to be forced to adopt better practices. But at the end of the day, that's how industry and business works, isn't it? If there's a cheap way of doing it, you know, we don't care about the ecological or kind of economical damage that we're going to do with that, or, you know, the ethical damage that we're going to do, sadly. But I really feel that we should.
You really do care, and new generations do. One thing we must both have learned in our creative careers, commercial creativity, is that limitations can be a godsend. They can give you answers you wouldn't otherwise have. We've just been in the loom room with one of the students, and that idea that it's the sort of digital loom is meant to be almost like a big swatch machine, but nonetheless students have been punking it to turn it into something else. Are you finding that students that you deal with every day are finding the limitations and the drama and the head trip of the climate crisis, is that in any way being flipped into inspiration for them?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think kind of, you know, I mean, it should be. As a student, you should be into kind of, you should be rebelling against how you're told that things should be done,
yes,
you know. You should find different ways. If somebody says, no, this machine is just for swatching, you should go, oh, I'm going to make a zero-waste garment with it, as Sarah Devianathan did on her MA, which was brilliant, you know. And I would truly encourage students to do that and look at these alternative ways. I do genuinely believe that kind of the new generations that are coming through are kind of much more ecologically conscious. So I see a lot with students as they're coming into interview or they're kind of starting, they care about recycled fabrics, they care about the planet, they care about sustainability, which is great. You know, it wasn't, I don't think it, you know, I hate to say it, but I don't think it really crossed my mind that much when I was a student.
No, I agree, me too.
You know, and I feel almost guilty that it didn't. Yeah. But there's definitely a new generation coming through that are kind of looking at these things in a very different way. Using the tech in different ways to find solutions is something that I really encourage them to do. But they're already on that. But on the flip side of that, you've got to think about, you know, this word sustainability. Everybody said, well, I'm sustainable, you know, I'm a brand and I'm sustainable because I'm going to recycle this garment that you've brought back to me. Well, actually what's going to happen is we're going to take one button off of there, the rest is going to go to landfill, but we're then going to tell you that we're sustainable because we're recycling our product and we've got a circular economy, when, you know, it's greenwashing. It's not true. And I think kind of breaking that down to actual real solutions is what is important, because, you know, bamboo silk does not make a brand sustainable. You know, having these sort of taglines of a recycled fabric does not make a brand sustainable.
Totally agree. I've got this pet theory that greenwashing is the beginning, because if they feel they need, they must, say that, then they might begin to embody it. And with a few activisty thinkers in there, perhaps we can turn the industry. And it is, as you say, having to. But now, fast forward in your career, we are sitting in the AUB Innovation Studio. Mm. And you, what role do you play in that?
So I'm actually in a seconded role at the moment. So I run the MA in Digital Fashion Innovation, and I work on the BA supporting the students with their digital fashion work. But what the university have done is they've offered me this year to be seconded to the Innovation Studio, so I can take my research and I can take the methodologies and try and implement that and support brands to kind of take on this new way of working, take on kind of what, I mean, I say new way, it's not a new way of working. And I think a lot of brands kind of suddenly woke up. So COVID, you know, brands suddenly had big boxes of garments and strike-offs and samples stuck, and they couldn't get them in. So that's where a lot of our alumni from the last few years sort of said in the companies that they were working in, I can actually digitally sample that for you. We don't need to wait for that box to be released. We can do that. And so a lot of brands suddenly went, oh, there's this other way of working. Mm. Oh, we need to work. And suddenly there was this big sort of boom in kind of, you know, our students getting these amazing jobs, and not even necessarily jobs that were kind of a junior position. They were going in and they were training teams and they were sort of generating these new ways of working. And off the back of that, I think the industry's gone, oh, okay. So they were forced to work in a certain way. Yeah. But then they've seen the advantages of something that they were turning a blind eye to start with. And they've gone, okay, well, this actually fits in with some of the legislation and some of the things that we're having to do. So suddenly people are going, can you help us? And the nice thing for me is through this secondment is that I can sort of say, yes, I can help you. And, you know, it's great for the university as well, because within that we can look at knowledge transfer partnerships. We can look at kind of, you know, putting our graduates into brands to create these new practices. But there's funding there. There's research funding, which means I then get more time to kind of, you know, what's the next bit? What's the next bit we can do to kind of get better?
Yeah, and you were saying that you know why you're here. You do use the platform of an institution to try things that you want to try. Mm. You said when you walked through here, good story behind it of how you fell into teaching,
yeah,
and instantly loved it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I kind of got to that point. So one of the last roles that I did in industry was with a brand called Turnbull & Atta. And I went in to support them in using 3D prototyping, virtual prototyping avatars. But again, with a lot of brands, they were at a point of needing kind of just to keep up with deadlines. So actually, I ended up being quite an expensive cog in a production wheel, because I didn't get to the point of actually being able to instigate these sort of new working methodologies, because they were kind of like, well, yeah, we've brought you in to do that, but can you just go and help with this, because we're really behind here. And I was having that conversation actually on a Hindu with a friend that I'd met mutually, Jodie, who works here. And we were having a chat about it, and I was like, oh, I'm working in London, but commuting backwards and forwards with family in Dorset. And, you know, I'm thinking about a change. I want to kind of have a platform to make a change for the industry, because, you know, we need to make things better. And I don't know where that platform's going to come from or how to do it, because I'm not succeeding. Jodie and I were in a yurt in a field in Brighton in the pouring rain, and she was heavily pregnant and went, well, why don't you do my maternity leave at the university? Why don't you apply for that? And, you know, we use the digital tech there, and, you know, you'd have the platform to kind of learn a bit more about the digital tech and kind of see if education's something you want to go into, and maybe actually educate the students that then go out and make these changes in the industry. So I was like, come on then, give it a go. So literally it was that. I just thought, you know what, I've got to the stage of wanting that change and wanting a new challenge. And so I got back from the Hindu, put my application in, and yeah, I've been here since.
And you've shown me around delightfully all afternoon here. introducing me to a world of people in different rooms that all have different vibes and smells and equipment in them, all part of the componentry of this space. And you are a living golden thread through all of it. It's obvious you know what ties this place together, and you have a sense of mission in there that ties it together in your head. But this, just at the most basic level, the Innovation Studio, it's a space, it's a hub, it's a lab. What is it? Because it is quite an intersection of things here.
Yeah, I think kind of, you know, for me, I was really lucky to kind of talk on the opening night of the Innovation Studio, because, you know, the fact we have been really innovative in our fashion curriculum. So we're sort of really integrated digital sustainable practices and innovation into the curriculum. And so we sort of were a case study at the opening night. So this is it happening in practice, because, you know, it's great, you see a building and you see lots of machinery, but, you know, what does that mean and how do you work it? And I think, you know, for me from that night, it was kind of like, okay, we need to be multidisciplinary. We can solve problems when we work with other people. We can't do it solo, and we can learn from other disciplines. So like you said, it's kind of, you know, I'm kind of like, well, what can I use over there? So we've got VR. Okay, well, let's do some virtual showrooms, because if we go into a virtual showroom, it means that, like I did in my career, I don't have to fly to Germany with a whole collection on a van, take it there, show it to the buyers. What's bought then goes into production. What doesn't goes into dead stock. Well, VR, we can do that virtually, and then we're not wasting anything, you know, and we can invite people into that VR space all around the world. You know, we've got 3D printers. Okay, so what could we do with 3D printers? How could we kind of, you know, how can we use this tech to solve the problems? And I think that's what the Innovation Studio One can do really well. And it's also, you know, when we were talking earlier, it's a place where you have the opportunity to fail risk-free. And I think that's something that's really, really important. That's where innovation comes, because if you say stay in your safe space and you know what you're going to do is going to succeed, then that's not innovation, because it means it's already happened before and you know that it's going to work. For true innovation, you need to have failures. You need to have things that don't work. You need to kind of be able to test things, and you need a team. You need a team of people that know, I can use this bit of kit. I can use this bit of kit. Well, what happens if we bring those two bits of kit together? We don't know. Well, let's have a look, let's see. And that's kind of what this space provides people at all levels. It provides the students, it provides the academics that space, it provides startup businesses, it provides it for really established businesses. We work with a lot of very established businesses. You know, we've been working with automotive businesses as well as kind of, you know, I'm on the fashion side, but a few weeks ago we were looking at, you know, sports cars. You know, and how we can kind of, you know, fashion and sports cars, how does that go? But the same design solutions can go in to solve sustainability methodology issues. It doesn't matter what the discipline is.
No, exactly. I mean, we work with theatres as well and all sorts of things. And this is a building full of team, full of experts, yeah, with different expert machines. Yeah. We were discussing how the resource here is kind of nuts, really, for a young person trying to figure out what they want to do, and that a lot of us feel like we'd start to understand what to do with it after we've left. But that's part of the intersection here, that you put businesses and people further down the line, not just coming back to do postgrads and MAs like you did, but businesses sit, we're sitting next to a business here, and they sit next to the students sometimes in the lectures. That's a different dynamic, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And it's a dynamic that I think sometimes makes people nervous. What's she doing? Why has she got students in the same room as industry? You know, and there is the questions around, well, the students are paying those fees, and what's the industry paying? But for me, it's about that kind of intersection of different stages of career. And, you know, if a student is in a room using how to use a piece of creative technology, and somebody that has been in industry for 20 years and is looking at enhancing their business sits next to them with that piece of creative technology, you know, isn't that the most lovely exchange to be able to offer both? You know, maybe that person from industry will end up employing this student. You know, maybe the student will go, okay, I hadn't thought about that as a career path, you know. So it for me, it's kind of, it's just a great way of working. We've got a session next Tuesday, we've got menswear brands Three Dark coming in. We've got the guys from Element Creative coming in, and they're going to sit in the same room as my master's students, and they're all going to learn how to render in Clo 3D together. You know, and for me, that is true sort of circular education. Mm. That is kind of, you know, and from that room, again, that's where innovation is going to spark. That's where, you know, this Through Dark might turn around and say, Through Dark, we're in a few months back, and, you know, one of our students, Alex, who's in level 6, met them when they came in to talk to me. He's now working for them. So he's now working for them on some R&D projects. You know, the innovation studio is working with them on some new innovative zip pullers, you know. But it's connecting all of these people, and then how wonderful to have your undergraduate students, your postgraduate students, your residents in the innovation studio, your staff and the brands, all collaborating.
You've just described innovation. And, and the fact that accidents come out of juxtaposing things. And that's such a big creative principle, isn't it?
Yeah, of course it is. Of course it is. You know, that is the key to creativity, you know. And I always think kind of, I wouldn't be able to do what I did without the team of people and the friends that I work with. You know, we recently did a webinar, so we were asked by Clo 3D to represent how their creative tech is being used in higher education. You know, we were really honoured that they chose us out of all the universities that are using it as kind of, you know, they sort of see us as kind of leading the way with innovation. And, you know, but I was like, well, I can't do that alone, because, you know, some of the research that I did when I was looking at kind of avatars, body scanning, shape, size, I worked with my colleague Kyra, and she was helping me with kind of, you know, creating some of the Blender, some of the Cinema 4D, some of, you know, and Jordan in the innovation studio, he was helping with some of the VR aspects. Christian, who you met earlier, he was helping me with some of the clothes, you know. I can't do the things that I do without working with lots of other people. And I think kind of this really shows that. And people from different industries and different disciplines. So the fashion department, we work really closely with Harvey in the VFX department, because we want to create, you know, some of our students want to create digital only product, and they want to do it for Roblox or the metaverse, you know, and they want it to move. So, you know, I don't know how to make it move, so I need to go and work with somebody in VFX or somebody in film to make it move.
Yeah, the fact that the manufacturing industry is so big in twinning and end-to-end modelling of things to really bring down waste cost in testing things. It's no surprise the fashion industry is, but as you say, we're now moving into gaming engines. Unreal Engine is making movies now, yeah. And the gaming people can help you light things and model things. And we're talking to each other through Roblox and gaming platforms anyway, not social media platforms in the same way. Yeah. It's no wonder you need to go and talk to the people
You know, I mean, Roblox is the new social media, you know, and TikTok shops are going to be the new Amazon, you know, especially for Generation Alpha as they move forwards. And, you know, what I do in the side of things with the in-real-life methodology, so using digital to create more sustainable practices, to reduce sampling, you know, that's really great. But as a byproduct of working in that way, you get a digital and a physical at the end of the day. But that digital product, that's, you know, wow, there's so much going on in the industry. What do we do with that digital product? Who wants to use that digital product? Generation Alpha are already prioritizing their digital self, their digital representation, over their physical representation. Now, that is nuts. But what does that mean for the industry? That means that there is a massive space for digital-only products. That means there's a massive space for gaming skins, you know, and it's that gap in the middle as well. It's that sort of phygital gap, as we say. So I've been working really closely with Louise Lang, who set up Phygital Twin. You know, you might have somebody in gaming that has created digital only fashion product, but you couldn't make that in real life. Nobody could actually take that and put that on, you know. So what's really interesting is that's this sort of intersection. You know, if you're thinking, so 60% of the jobs that Gen Alpha are going to do when they're my age don't exist at the moment, a lot of those jobs are going to sit in that phygital area, where you're translating the digital and the kind of the real stuff, and translating and communicating between those two areas, communicating between gaming, online, and physical and real.
And this is why creative thinking really is a vital tool to thrive in the later 20, 21st century, how to process this is not actually different, though the context really is. So you and I going to art school, learn how to think like that. You're equipping students to be able to adapt, right?
Yeah, exactly. And it is being able to adapt. I think one of the main differences is going to be as we come through in education and the new generations that are coming through is, you know, when you and I were at art school, probably not art school, it was probably after art school, but when people started to use Photoshop and Illustrator, and, you know, I started to use a bit of that towards the end of my kind of degree, you know, and you would spend a really long time learning one thing. Adaptability is really key for the newer generations. They do not want to spend 6 months learning one piece of software. They can't, because there's new bits of software popping up all the time. And it's quite exhausting. I put together a lecture, What is Digital Fashion? And I delivered it to my September intake on the MA, and by Christmas I had to change it and update it, and then by January, when my January starters, I had to update it again. You know, you can no longer live off of one curriculum that stays the same and just regenerate it, you know, and reproduce the same thing. Industry is changing, so if you are in that space of innovation or the fields that are feeding into that space of innovation, you have to be adaptable and you have to be quick. And these students that are coming through are really good at it. You know, they can already design stuff in Roblox. I don't know if you saw, there was a student from Birmingham University, Mumbeam, and he beat Carly Kloss and Gucci to the most visited Roblox fashion wardrobe.
Of course, you know? And he's not, as it should be.
And he's 19 years old, and he's not studying fashion, and he does this as a hobby. It's not even what he's doing for his degree.
Of course it's not.
You know, so to think that students are going to come on board to a university degree and curriculum and not want a really reactive, fast-paced curriculum is, you know, it's... We need to start thinking in these ways, and that adaptability and that innovation and that testing and the creative technology is just going to expand. It's just going to keep expanding.
But by rooting it in creative thinking, actually helping young people have a handle on the story they're trying to tell. Forget the tools. What are you trying to say? What are you trying to make? Where are you trying to lead people? What's the experience? All those narrative references are the anchor through the middle of whatever the tech is. But the Innovation Studio allows you to keep up with how to deliver that stuff, right?
And that's what's so lovely about having the Innovation Studio and Arts University of Bournemouth, where we are. We are designers, we are artists, we are craftsmen, women, we work with our hands, we are artisanal. You know, all of those amazing skills are needed more than ever, because we are able to understand and adapt with that innovation. We are able to kind of think about, okay, you saw it with the digital loom. Well, what happens if we bring, you know, digital technology and craft together? That's really exciting.
It's really exciting. It's why artists should be leading. I don't use the word should casually, but I do think it's an obligation for us to lead the thinking. Yeah. It's not about the tech. No. The thing is not the thing. It's about what you're trying to say and what that effect that has on us as people.
And it's about using it, which is what I always go back to, using it to solve a problem. That's why I do what I do. I want to use the creative technology to solve the issues of, you know, unsustainable fashion practice. But that doesn't mean that everything needs to be digital. It doesn't mean that I wasn't super excited to see Galliano's first debut collection for Margiela. Like, you know, the true beauty of creativity, the true beauty of true fashion, true fine art, you know, that is withstanding, and that will always be withstanding, because, you know, it's beautiful, and why would we not want to see these beautiful, beautiful creations? But we need to kind of think about, okay, within that, those, the way we think as designers, the way we think as kind of creatives, if we take that thinking and we, you know, homogenize that with the creative technology, that is the pure innovation, and that's where we can find solutions to the issues. You know, we started with the digital fashion has been at the university for years. So Patricia Grice started digital fashion here years ago with Lectra, and she was absolutely amazing. She's an author, she's written books on the subject, and she truly taught me what I know in kind of digital, like the grounding of how to use it, you know, and adding that in. And then we started to work with we started to work with kind of, you know, one of the first things we did, myself and my colleague Ian Archer, who used to be course leader at the time, we brought in half-scale mannequins. We're like, well, the students are using all of this fabric all the time when they're draping on a full-scale mannequin. How about they half-scale drape, use half the amount of fabric, that's more sustainable, and then they digitize it in to make it full scale. So we use the digital process to make it big. And that was literally the start of that kind of innovation of the kind of the 3D drape on the stand, but making it smaller to make it more sustainable, then using the technology to grade it and make it full scale by the time you, but you don't do that until you've resolved where you need to be using less fabric. And that was kind of the real sort of start of the journey.
Plus, the scaled mannequins, it starts, it has that extra frisson of physical model making, which everybody's a bit excited by, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you know, and they just look really lovely.
They look really lovely, right? Yeah, I suppose they do. Penny, this is a lovely chat, and I could chat to you all afternoon about many things that could wax quite philosophical. I guess my last question to you would be your hope for the industry. What's the thing you want to see where you feel we've really made progress, or a turning point? Is there such a thing that you would look forward to?
So I think, you know, for me, I'm really lucky at the moment with the secondments. So as we've mentioned, we're working with the menswear brand Throughdark, and they do everything manually. So we're going in and we're taking them from, you know, fully manual to fully digital in their sort of sample and supply chain process. You know, they will still use physical sampling, that you still need to physically sample, but if you can eliminate a lot of that process, then you can be far more sustainable. We're going to be putting far less amount of garments into dead stock and into landfill. We're going to be flying a lot less of our garments around the world backwards and forwards to factory. And I kind of think if I can, you know, having the, you know, I've been really lucky with the brand going, cool, okay, do it. Just come on board. We like what you said. We see what you said. You know, I've been working really closely with Ben Hewitt, and he really sees the vision that I have. And so he's gone, yeah, cool, let's do it. And I think kind of having that case study and then being able to showcase that case study and go, look, this isn't actually that hard. I know you've done things this way for a really long time, but this isn't that hard, and you will benefit from this, and the planet will benefit from this. And I just would love to see more brands implementing digital technology to alleviate some of the kind of environmental issues that the industry has. And if I could kind of create, you know, a methodology that brands are going to accept and work with, then that's going to have a lasting impact on environmental factors. And for me, that's really important. And like when we were discussing earlier, of course, people reach out all the time to me to ask me to come and consult with them and to do that. And again, that's why I stay where I am at the university, because if I went into a brand, I'd only be able to work with one brand at a time, you know, or kind of, you know, we would be able to get to the point of kind of, you know, we'll interject that here, we'll interject that there. But then that takes me away from all of the kit and the what's next, you know, because for me, the what's next is really important as well. You know, OK, so we've got this, we can start to implement this in some areas, but what's the next good thing we can do that's going to have a good environmental impact for the industry? And can we show a way with the fashion industry that can then be adopted by other industries as well? So I guess my hope is just to kind of, you know, be able to have an impact on brands being truly more sustainable.
You said it's about trying to do some good and have an impact. That's more important to you in the end than doing something flashy.
Oh yeah, completely. Yeah, absolutely. You know, having an impact, you know, and also having fun, you know. How amazing. Yes. I get to wake up every morning. And I, you know, I remember when I was much younger, before I went to art college, you know, I finished school, I worked for an insurance company for a while, and you'd wake up and you'd go, oh, I really don't want to go to work. You know, I'm so lucky because I haven't had that feeling for 20 years, you know, because I wake up and I love what I do. And the fact that I can wake up, I can love what I do, I can work in an industry I want to work in, and I can hopefully make a little bit of an impact, you know, And all it will do is, you know, if lots of people are making a little bit of an impact, then hopefully we can have a bigger impact. So every student that comes through our education system here, if they all go out and they make that little bit of impact and they take a little bit of that kind of manifesto, my manifesto, AUB's manifesto, the Innovation Studio's manifesto of being sustainable practitioners, if they take that into, out into industry, hopefully, you know, we can have our, you know, I call them my sort of digital fashion army, you know, the graduates that go out and kind of, you know, and also what's also exciting that I get to see them succeed in what they're doing and I get to see them make an impact, which is, you know, for me, truly, you know, that's really exciting as well, seeing how excited they are when brands go, oh, you know, we had a student that graduated recently and she went in to do a specific role and they went, oh, but you can do this and this as well. So she's now started a whole new role within that brand based on using digital fashion technology to merchandise stock. So a brand can see what the in-store merchandising is going to look like before having to physically get anybody to go to the store or move around. And that's a whole new job. You know, and within 6 months of being in the company, she created a new job role that now that job role will probably start popping up at all these other places. And for me, that's kind of super exciting.
Newsflash, an innovation studio actually promotes, trains and creates innovation. Who knew it was possible? Penelope Norman, thank you so much.
Thank you.
This has been Timo Peach for Peer Journal, but you knew that. See the future. Discover more links and video and reading on the blog of this post at unseethefuture.com. And be the first to get the future in your inbox. Subscribe to the Momo Memos at unseethefuture.com/amigos. Listen, read, ponder, and share. Do. Unsee the Future is a Momo Tempo production. Obviously.